And the Lord answers yes to both of those questions, and so David leaves. So the Lord leaves, gets David to leave Keilah by knowing and telling David what will happen if he stays. And so here's a summary of the whole story from here through the next few chapters, and even earlier. And Saul sought him every day, but God did not give him into his hand. So this is a good summary, as I mentioned, of what's coming up today, what's coming up in the next few weeks. Today we're going to finish 1 Samuel 23. We ended with these verses, and we're going to start with the same verses tonight, going to overlap a couple of verses because they're a good transition to the next part of the story. If you have an ESV Bible, it starts a new section in verse 15, and it says, Saul pursues David. That could be a long time. But we'll break this section, Samuel, 1 Samuel 23, 14 to 29, into three parts. The first part will be Jonathan strengthens David's hand in God. The second part, the Ziphites offer to give David into Saul's hand. And Saul pursues David around the mountain. So Jonathan strengthens David's hand in God. Again, we'll start by reading verses 14 to 18 and then look at those a little bit more closely. And David remained in the strongholds of the wilderness, in the hill country of the wilderness of Ziph. And Saul sought him every day, but God did not give him into his hand. David saw that Saul had come to seek out his life, or to seek his life, and David was in the wilderness of Ziph at Horesh. And Jonathan, Saul's son, rose and went to David at Horesh and strengthened his hand in God. And he said to him, "Do not fear, for the hand of Saul, my father, shall not find you. You shall be king over Israel, and I shall be next to you. Saul, my father, also knows this." And the two of them made a covenant before the Lord. David remained at Horesh, and Jonathan went home. So let's look at this a little bit more closely now. Jonathan strengthens David's hand in God. So, and David remained in the strongholds in the wilderness, in the hill country of the wilderness of Ziph. So what kind of a place do you think of when you think of stronghold? He remained in the stronghold. Well, anybody familiar with Masada in Israel? Okay, so Masada is based on the word for stronghold here. So the word for this is a mountain fortress. It may or may not be fortified with human buildings on it. Masada is, but most of them were not. A couple of weeks ago, in Iran, Iran shot down an F-35 E with a pilot and a weapons systems operator. You'll remember the story. They found the pilot right away. They didn't find the weapons systems official or officer for about 50 hours. And Iran was searching for him all the time, right? So it's though they wanted to find him. And if you remember the story, they're looking for him. We're looking for him. Finally, we've got technology that makes us be able to do that. But when you think about it, he's been injured somewhat, and he's down, and he's got to get somewhere. Right, and they want him to get as far away as he can. So how did he stay hidden for 50 hours? from the Iranians that were looking for him with way better technology than Saul had. Well, he was in a stronghold. He had made his way to a mountain stronghold that was inaccessible. That's what makes it a stronghold. At least it's very, very difficult to get there. That's what Israel has. They have a lot of that kind of thing, especially in the southeast part of Israel along the Dead Sea, and that's where David was, in that general area. There are a lot of things that have cliffs and peaks and crevices and caves in the rocks that you just can't find somebody if they want to hide from you. So yeah, southeast Israel has a lot of those things. And southeast Israel is where Masada is. If you are familiar with that place on the south end of the Dead Sea, just west of the Dead Sea, that's where Masada is. So you get the impression here, and Saul sought him every day, but God did not give him into his hand. So you get the impression that Saul was looking for him for a long time, every day. Really means all the days. He was looking for him all the days. But his best efforts were powerless if God did not give David into his hands. He would never be found. David would never be found because God would not give him into Saul's hand. So that word hand, if you're reading along in your Bible, you may have noticed in the first part of 1 Samuel 23, the first 20 verses, it is used over and over again, the word hand. The hand of Saul most of the time. The hand of David is in there. The hand of Ahimelech, the priest, is in there. But mostly it's Saul. But one hand that is never mentioned is the hand of God. But that doesn't mean that his hand wasn't there. This, of course, should remind us that of what Jesus says, that my sheep hear my voice, that section, they follow me, I give them eternal life, nothing can take them out of, nothing can snatch them away from my hand, nothing can snatch them away from my Father's hand, and nobody's greater than that. God's hand is ultimate protection. And though Saul sought David every day, and David knew it, he still remained in the same place, in the wilderness of Ziph, and Saul couldn't find him. David saw that Saul had come to seek his life, and David was in the wilderness of Ziph at Horesh. Saul couldn't find him. But Jonathan found him, and you get the impression that he found him very quickly. And Jonathan, Saul's son, rose and went to David at Horesh. You get the impression it wasn't very hard for him to find him. What's the difference? God wanted Jonathan to find him right away. And Jonathan didn't have to seek for him every day. He got up and he went to him. Now, Saul would have had the same intelligence that Jonathan had, but God wanted him to find David. And here's what Jonathan did. Jonathan strengthened his hand, that's David's hand, in God. So when you hear that, when you hear that Jonathan strengthened his hand, what do you think that means? They didn't go to the gym. It means that he encouraged him in the sense of this. He gave him courage. He encouraged him. He gave him courage. Now, the Bible speaks very highly of encouraging other people. It's one of the things that we as Christians are supposed to do for each other, is to strengthen each other and encourage each other. And here's just an example of this from 1 Thessalonians, just a few verses in 1 Thessalonians that I'm going to read. You could search for encourage and encouragement and find lots of places that you, that refer to things like this. But let's just read, I'll just read 1 Thessalonians 5, 11 to 14, which is at the end of one paragraph and starts another. Therefore, encourage one another and build one another up, just as you are doing. We ask you, brothers, to respect those who labor among you and are over you in the Lord and admonish you and to esteem them very highly in love because of their work. But then this, but be at peace among yourselves. And we urge you, brothers, admonish the idle, encourage the faint-hearted, help the weak, be patient with all of them. Be patient, encourage each other. So, but notice it says here, he strengthened his hand in God. So how do you strengthen someone's hand in God? How do you encourage them in God? Well, David and Jonathan had built a close relationship over the years. And they were like the best of best friends. 1 Samuel 18 starts off this way. As soon as he had finished speaking to Saul, this is Jonathan, the soul of Jonathan was knit to the soul of David. And Jonathan loved him as his own soul. And Saul took him that day and would not let him return to his father's house. And Jonathan made a covenant with David because he loved him as his own soul. Jonathan stripped himself of the robe that was on him because he was the next in line to be king, and he gave it to David and his armor and even his sword and his bow and his belt. In other words, Jonathan was deferring to David. Jonathan was the one of higher rank. He was the king's son that would be king someday if things proceeded normally. But he takes off his royal garments and he gives them to David. He loves him, and David loves him just as much. David loves Jonathan just as much as Jonathan loves David. And so they had a very close relationship, really the best of friends. And now it's at a long-distance relationship because Jonathan's father is trying to kill David. And Jonathan has even helped David escape from his father. But they don't see each other very often. So it's a long-distance relationship, and he comes and he finds him. Another aspect of strengthening someone's hand in God is that it must be in God. Anyone can encourage anyone else, or at least make that effort, but there is a special connection between those who are of faith, between those who are believers. We are to have that as Christians. Jonathan and David had that in their day. In this book of 1 Samuel, they both have very strong faith. They act on their faith. They do things on their faith. And in a relationship like that, no family relationship can compensate for that. If there isn't faith, encouragement from a family doesn't mean as much as encouragement from a fellow believer. Often in our prayer chain, we'll get messages like this, that I'm really thankful for our church, and that I feel so encouraged knowing that so many people are praying for me. So just think about that. Maybe you don't feel like you have the gift of encouragement, but you can pray, right? We have prayer chain, you have friends who need prayer. They're so encouraged to know that people are praying for them. Praying, in a good way to pray is to pray that the Lord will strengthen them. Yes, physically, if it's a physical thing, if it's a surgery or something like that, but also just this. Strengthen them in God. Think about strengthening their hand in God, encouraging them in God. What does that mean? Helping strengthen their faith. Pray that their strength would be in Christ. Pray that they would trust in Him. Pray that they would trust that He has them in His hand as they go through this. Because that's far more valuable than anything that we could ever do. Anything else we could ever do. Pray too that God will give them that trust, that they can trust in Him. Jonathan and David both had that. They both understood that. They knew that when Jonathan came, David knew it, Jonathan knew it, that if Jonathan would come, he would be strengthening, and what he would do would be strengthening him by encouraging him by asking him to trust what the Lord has told him. So Jonathan and David, they meet up here. By the way, this ends up being the last time they meet alive. Jonathan is killed before they ever meet again. But what do they do? Jonathan is the one encouraging David, and Jonathan strengthens David by saying three sentences, though, in our English Bibles. Here's what he says. Do not fear, for the hand of Saul, my father, shall not find you. And so how does he know that? How does he know that his father's not... Notice it's the hand of his father. The hand of Saul won't find him. He may have just deduced that because he knew that David had been anointed king. He's also seen him, though, escape from Saul, and that Saul has not been able to kill him, though he has repeatedly tried. So he knows. He may have had some kind of assurance from the Lord, but just notice this here. It says this. The hand of Saul, my father, shall not find you. You will not come under the power of the hand of the possession of Saul, my father. Other translations for this next section. There are a few different translations for this. I think New American Standard and ESV both translate it the same way, but there are others. You shall be king over Israel, and I shall be next to you. So do you have a Bible that has something different from that? I will be next to you. Anybody? That I will be second to you. Is that NIV? Yeah, okay. So I will be next to you. It really says, I will be to you a second. In other words, I'll be second to you, like the NIV puts it. I'll be second in your command. I won't be king. I will be second over you. You will be king over Israel. I'll be second to you. I'm going to defer to you. Now, this isn't a prophecy, obviously, because it never happens. Jonathan dies. So both of these statements are emphatic, though. It's kind of like it would say, because this is what we should expect would be the opposite way. David was Saul's general for a while. He was ahead of his army for a while. And the best he could hope for would be to be second in command over Saul's successor. But that's not what happens here. It's as if Jonathan says it this way. You are the one who will be king over Israel, and I will be your second. So, doesn't happen, as I mentioned. Jonathan dies before David actually takes the throne away. But this is Jonathan understanding God's plan and deferring to David. And the third word of encouragement Jonathan tells David is, Saul, my father, knows this. So what does that mean? I right away when I read that, when I've read that in the past, I think this, that, well, Saul knows that David's going to be king. In fact, he's in the next chapter, he's going to tell David, yeah, you're going to be king. But a guy named Steinemann in his commentary puts it this way. It doesn't simply mean that Saul knows that David's going to be king. It also means the rest of this. He knows the rest of this. He knows, for example, he's not going to find you. He's going to keep looking. He's going to keep trying to fool himself, but he knows he's not going to find you. He knows that you're going to be king over Israel, and he knows that my plan is to defer to you and be your second. Saul, my father, also knows this. And yet, he seeks him every day, but God doesn't give him into his hand. So notice this, Jonathan doesn't hide the fact that Saul is his father. And actually, Jonathan remains loyal to his father in this sense. He follows all the things to honor his father that he can, short of what God has commanded. Jonathan is also loyal to David because he knows that God is going to make him king. But he stays with Saul. He fights with Saul. He goes on battles with the Saul. He lives with Saul. He's still with his father. He doesn't have to hide that there's some kind of inherent conflict in what he's telling him. He's my father, but I'm loyal to you. It's like these two have this kind of a relationship. A guy that I used to be in business with would say this. And if you guys know some of the guys, you don't know this guy that I used to be in business with. But anyway, he would when he starts a negotiation, he goes, okay, like this. And he was telling the truth at this. Okay, cards on the table. In other words, I have nothing to hide from you. That's the kind of thing that he says here. I have nothing to hide. I'm not holding anything back. I'm telling you everything I have. I'm telling you everything I want. I'm not holding a thing back. That's the way this relationship was. Everything is on the table. And then when the loyalties conflict, Jonathan goes with his God over his father. By the way, that's what Jesus commands us to do. When he says things like, no one can come after me unless he hates his father and mother and sister and brother. And that's what this means. I mean, when there's a conflict in loyalties, when family is conflicting with following God, your loyalty has to be with God. It must be with God. All other relationships pale in comparison to that. You have to follow God. That's what Jonathan does. And the two of them made a covenant before the Lord. So I mentioned that they had already made a covenant. They've already made these covenants. But this is And it doesn't tell us what the terms of this are, but they have made a covenant before, reinforced that covenant, actually lived out that covenant. They're not going to harm each other. They're going to tell each other the truth. So why then do they make this new last covenant? I think it's recorded in here so that we knew that this was the kind of relationship that they had. They would continually tell each other this. And the reason we see this one is because it is the last time that they are going to see each other. And we know from here, because we can trust Jonathan and we can trust David, that though Saul is pursuing David, Jonathan is not taking his information back to Saul. Jonathan is not chasing down David. They have a covenant. They won't see each other again in this life. Just reminds me that you know, we don't, most of the time, we don't know when the last time is we're going to see our best friend or a really, really, really good friend. It's good to know that. It's good to think about that. They probably didn't know that. They probably didn't think that. But that relationship that they have here, the last time they meet, it demonstrates the love that they have for each other. Like you always hope yours will. So if you have, you know, one of these great friendships that is at distance, or maybe it's not even at distance, just make sure what you're doing is strengthening their hand in God, encouraging them to trust God, encouraging them to find their hope in God, because you share the hope. And unless you're of the faith, nobody else does. Nobody else shares that hope that you have with your friend, unless they have the same hope that you do. Next, Ziphites offer to give David into Saul's hand. We'll have to speed up here a little bit, but that's okay. Then the Ziphites went up to Saul at Gibeah. So remember that. He's in the wilderness of Ziph. That's where David is. And they say, "Is not David hiding among us in the strongholds of Horesh, in the hill country of Hachilah, which is south of Yeshimon? Come now, O king, according to all your heart's desire, to come down, and our part shall be to surrender him into the king's hand." And Saul said, "May you be blessed by the Lord, for you have had compassion on me. Go, make yet more sure. Know and see the place where his foot is, and who has seen him there, for it is told me that he is very cunning. See, therefore, and take note of all the lurking places where he hides." Love that. "And come back to me and share it with sure information. Then I will go with you, and if he is in the land, I will search him out among all the thousands of Judah." And they arose and went to Ziph ahead of Saul. Then the Ziphites, so who were they? So they're the people of it. There's a city, and then there's a wilderness around it, and the wilderness around it is where David is. But there's a city of Ziphites. Well, who were they? There's no reason to think that they would be bad guys. They're descendants of Caleb. You remember Joshua and Caleb as they come in from into Israel from the Promised Land. They're the only two that get to come in from the whole generation of men because of their faithfulness to God. So this town is in the southern, southeastern part of Israel, where there are these fortresses we talked about, these strongholds. So David was there, David was nearby, and they think they know where he is. They can track him down. In fact, they're saying that we, is not David hiding among us, is really saying, he's hiding here. Now come down, O king, according to all your heart's desire. They care about, why do they do that? What do you think makes that? Gives every indication here that they're doing this for one of two reasons. Either for some reason they're against David, which that could be. A lot of people were against David. Or they think, we're going to do what's politically expedient. This is going to be good for us if we hand him over to the king. The king is going to reward us for doing that. Come down now, O king, according to all your heart's desire to come down. And on our part, our part shall be to surrender him into the king's hand. So we're supposed to notice, don't forget, this is the king's hand. The king who searches for him every day, but God doesn't give him into his hand. So how seriously does David take this threat from the Ziphites? Well, he writes a psalm about it. That's how seriously he takes it. Here's Psalm 54. I'll read the psalm. It's not that long. To the choir master with stringed instrument, a masculine of David, when the Ziphites went and told Saul, is David not hiding among us? That's pretty specific. And then he writes this. O God, save me by your name and vindicate me by your might. O God, hear my prayer and give ear to the words of my mouth. For strangers have risen against me. Ruthless men seek my life. They do not set God before themselves. And then this. Behold, God is my helper. The Lord is the upholder of my life. He will return the evil to my enemies. In your faithfulness, put an end to them. With a free will offering, I will sacrifice to you. I will give thanks to your name, O Lord, for it is good. For he has delivered me from every trouble, and my eye has looked in triumph on my enemies. David thought the threat was pretty serious, but he knew. He had confidence, right? The Lord would take care of him. But Saul says, may you be blessed by the Lord, for you have had compassion on me. He's talking to the Ziphites. So when I read this, I thought of, oh yeah, what Saul's doing here is having the form of godliness, but denying its power. New Testament reference in 2 Timothy. Yeah, he's going to say all the right things and do all the right things, but deny God's power. Remember, God has told him, I'm tearing the kingdom away from you. And he fights it every step of the way, denying God's power, thinking that he can get to David. And then he says this, for you have compassion on me. You have had compassion on me. You know, David, when he perceives that Jonathan is helping, so Saul, when he perceives that Jonathan is helping David get away, says things like, you guys are all against me. How come you guys are all against me? Nobody feels sorry for me, the king. And here he's got somebody who has compassion on him. That's the way he views it. Finally, somebody who will help me. But go and make yet more sure, know and see the place where his foot is. In other words, he moves around enough, got to find where he is and who has seen him there. Keep track of who it is so he can show me the place. For it is told me that he is very cunning. So this is, that's an interesting way to phrase it that the ESV says, has here, for it is told me that he is coming. Really it says, for or because he said he is very crafty or very cunning. Because he said. So Tsumura says that insertion here, this last clause, for he said, he is very crafty. Is Saul talking to himself or thinking to himself? This is why he's saying it. Find where he is. Make sure you know where he is. Because he's really crafty. I know he's really, really crafty or really cunning. So this would be used in a negative sense. I don't know what you think of the word crafty or cunning or something. It'd be a negative sense. It's based on a word in that you find in Genesis. So this word in Genesis is a little bit different. But it's like this. It's the best way to describe it in English is this way: is you could say he is a runner, not cunning, but this is making a parallel. He is a runner, and here it says he is running. Even this way. He is running to run. So he's an extreme runner, right? So notice that he's a runner is a noun or an adjective, but he runs is a verb. And he runs to run is a verb plus an infinitive. That's what you have here. So he runs to run. He's cunning to be cunning. And that word, or he is crafty to be crafty, always used in a negative concept. Or negative context, but here's where it's used in the other form where it would say like something, he's a runner. Here's the noun of it or the adjective of it. Now the serpent was more crafty than all the other beasts in the field. More crafty or more cunning. I know David's like that. He's that kind of a, he's that crafty. See, therefore, and take note of all the lurking places where he hides, and come back to me with sure information. Then I will go with you, and if he is in the land, I will search him out among the thousands of Judah. And they arose and went to Ziph ahead of Saul. So they're going back now. The Ziphites are going back. They're going to go find David. And then Saul's going to pursue him. But, and now David and his men were in the wilderness of Maon. They've moved in the Arabah to the south of Yeshimon. And Saul and his men went to seek him. And David was told. So he went down to the rock and lived in the wilderness of Maon. And when Saul heard that, he pursued after David in the wilderness of Maon. And Saul went on one side of the mountain, and David and his men on the other side of the mountain. And Saul was hurrying to get away, and David was hurrying to get away from Saul, as Saul and his men were closing in on David and his men to capture them. A messenger came to Saul saying, "Hurry and come, for the Philistines have made a raid against the land." So Saul returned from pursuing after David and went against the Philistines. Therefore, that place was called the Rock of Escape. And David went up from there and lived in the strongholds of En-Gedi. So Saul pursues David around the mountain. So now David and his men were in the wilderness of Maon. So they moved south again, closer to the place that would be Masada, maybe in the same area, maybe right around there. But they're in their south part, right next to the Dead Sea, if you've been there, in those cliffs that are around there. And Saul and his men went to seek him, and David was told. So he went down to the rock. Notice it's the rock, a place that they know about. Probably we use rock for that sometimes. It more formally means, or more accurately means, this kind of a rock, a cliff, a crag is another term that is used, but it's apparently a well-known one, where people know where it is. So he's living around this one place that people know where it is. It's famous for being that way. And when Saul heard that, he pursued after David in the wilderness of Maon. And Saul went on one side of the mountain, and David and his men on the other side of the mountain. And David was hurrying to get away from Saul. So pretty clear. They start out on opposite sides of the mountain. And as Saul and his men were closing in on David and his men to capture them, so we shouldn't get the idea that this is, they're going all around and around the mountain and Saul's gradually catching up with them. That's not what this means, that they're closing in this way. It's the kind of word that you would say, he's shutting them in, or he is surrounding them. So he probably divided his forces. He's got a lot more men than David does. David's got 600. Saul has thousands in his army. So he can split the forces. He's surrounding them. He's closing them in. He's shutting them in. In other words, he's just about got them. He's just this close to capturing David. And as luck would have it, a messenger came to Saul, saying, "Hurry and come, for the Philistines have made a raid against the land." Obviously, we know that that's not luck, right? No such thing as luck. There is not anything like that. So what is happening? What are the Philistines doing here? The Philistines are making a raid. So here's what that means. They were stripping the land. So if you've been here on Sunday nights, we've talked about this kind of thing. What happens is the enemy comes and raids all the grain at the time of harvest. And then you starve the people out, and then they eat the grain and they feed it to their animals, and they take it and they go and they haul it back home. That's what they do. That's the kind of things that the Philistines did into Israel, and others did into Israel when they were opposing them in the book of Judges. They go in, they raid them, they take all their food, and they leave. But they destroy everything when they're there. They eat, their animals eat all the stubble down, they eat the whole thing, they're going, and in other words, if you don't come now, these people are going to starve. The Philistines are making this raid. But notice it doesn't even tell us where this raid is. It's not important to the story. What's important to the story is this. We're supposed to notice. They showed up, the messenger showed up at exactly the right time to make sure that David does not get into Saul's hand. Saul, as king, was meant to go and to fight against them. That's what he had to do. That's what he was there for. He was there to do that. So he does. He does give up his pursuit. And Saul returned from pursuing David after and went against the Philistines. Saul seeking David every day, but God did not give him into his hand. But if you just think about this, we don't know which city. We don't know who it was. We don't know which region he was going to that the Philistines were raiding. But we can see in the grand purpose of God what he was doing with David. Now put yourself in whatever city that was that we don't know about. The Philistines are raiding us. What's God up to? We have no idea. And they wouldn't. God does, in the way God's plan works together, all of the things work together for the good of all of the people that are his people, that love him and are called into his purpose. No matter if that is not the major reason that the Philistines are attacking or not. So, really, you could refer to them as almost collateral damage, but God's taken care of them. There are many, many more reasons the Philistines are attacking. We just get to know one of them here. A picture of, you know, whatever's happening to you might not be just about you, might not be just about me, might not just be about us, might not just be about our church, might not just be about our family, might not just be about our city. God is accomplishing bigger things with the things he is doing. Things that we know about and things that we don't know about. And that's what he is doing here. His plan is so vast and so all-encompassing that there is no way we will ever understand it all. We're never going to know everything. We're never going to be omniscient. We're never going to know all of that there is. We're never going to be God. We could never figure this all out. Therefore, the place was called the Rock of Escape. Disputed meaning there might mean more like something like either slippery cliff or a cliff of divisions. Either one, slippery cliff where David slipped away, or cliff of divisions where God divided David from Saul. So again, though Saul sought David every day, God did not give him into his hand, and he doesn't give you into anybody else's hand either. You're always in his hand. Nobody can snatch you away. And David went up from there and lived in the strongholds of En-Gedi, which is a much nicer place. And that's where we'll pick it up next time. Father, thank you for your word to us. And the assurance that we can get, and the encouragement that we can get, the strength in you that we can get from seeing how you have acted in history and how you have done all things for your glory and our good, and you continue to do that. We pray these things as we leave today. In Jesus' name, amen.